Hey, you're listening to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And my name is John Lester.
And we are going to have a fantastic conversation today. John, tell us, what is your hot take?
My hot take is simply that there are too many small business founders and owners who are not getting what they want out of their business because they're not getting the sales that they want for a number of various reasons. And I'm looking to change that and help them.
I love that you open with that because I have existed in my entire career accidentally. I'm an accidental entrepreneur. And I've existed in this kind of startup world for a really long time. And one of the first things that they tell you if you're building a startup the right way is literally nothing matters about your product or your ideas or your branding or your logos if no one wants to buy it. And yet a lot of us start with, well, I have this really cool product idea and I have a logo and I have a Facebook page. And yet we haven't validated that people want to pay money for this thing.
That's correct. But there is a relatively simple reason for that. Is because we start out, not we, but the market space starts out believing that the solution to the problem that they solve for themselves has universal appeal. And they translate that solution from a technical perspective, because most solutions are technical in one shape or form or another. The buyer doesn't buy the technical solution. The buyer buys the solution to the problem they're feeling at the moment. So, and because a lot of the, especially nowadays, a lot of the startups or a lot of the young companies are technology based. And so they will have, you know, a great technology plan, a great technology stack, call it whatever you want. The buyer isn't looking to hear that. And I'll give you a quick example. You go in to buy a car. Why are you going in to buy a car? Well, maybe you're going in to buy a car because you got to have 7 seats to transport the kids' soccer team and all of the sundry groceries or something. And you walk in the door and the salesperson starts telling you about a sports car. Okay, wait a minute. And then he starts telling you about, oh, sorry, this is why you should buy this car because this is how well it's built. Wait a minute. All I'm trying to do is figure out, can I fit 7 kids in the car? So he hasn't tapped at all into the need of the buyer.
And we do this constantly. Sometimes I feel like, too, we might tap into a need, but not the need, right? So like if I'm trying to buy a 7-seater, right? First, I'm going to go in and I'm going to say my number one criteria is it has to seat 7. But would I like to have a conversation about what color it is? And would I like to have a conversation about all the funky features and how many miles it has and what the price is and all of that? Absolutely. But if you haven't satisfied my like hierarchy of needs, I guess, I'm a psychology background major. So for me, I'm like that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Like nobody cares if you're getting a college degree if you can't feed yourself, right? The first priority is survival.
Right. No, I still rely on Maslow today, even though some people are saying he's debunked, but I guess still completely rely on that. You can't think about actualization if you're not eating. It's kind of that simple.
Absolutely. And I'm guilty of this too, right? Like I've built multiple startups and successful ones with exits. And yet I still found myself when I started my newest venture making the same mistake that a lot of rookie founders make. I like built a product. I loved it. I thought it was beautiful. I connected with it because I loved the product.
Correct.
And I had a conversation with a mentor who said, I worry that you love the product. I worry that you love building the product more than you love solving the problem. And I had one of those like wide open moments. And I'm someone who should know better because I have done this multiple times. No, and yet I still fell into it.
You can't know better. The big problem, and we're really, and you know this from your training, the big problem is the biggest lies of the lies we tell to ourselves, because we have no ability to see our own blind spots. I mean, God made us I'm not trying to insult anybody or get in anybody's space with religion, but in my mind, God made us very curiously. The eyes only see forward, the ears only hear from the sides. We can't really figure out who we are. So we really do need other people to help us. We're social critters. We don't work by ourselves.
And I think it's important too to have people around you who believe in you enough to give you the benefit of the doubt, but not so much that they ignore that little voice inside their heads when you're doing something, right? I have a wonderful team. I have worked with them for many, many years. They believe in me so intensely. And almost I said to them, almost to the point where I think maybe they let me get a little blind because they believed that I, you know, knew what I was doing. And so true belief in people includes holding them accountable when you disagree and opening and voicing that disagreement.
I think we, to a large extent, and again, this is only from my own experience. I don't know how the rest of the world or even the rest of the country or the other generations treat this, but to a large extent, I think we've done a disservice by trying to instill upon people as they're going through school, this notion of being nice and being sensitive to other people without putting the proper constraints around it. And I told this to people I work for, I told this to people I work with that work for me. I would rather that you were honest to me. Yes, please phrase it somewhat nicely, but you know what? I'd rather that you were honest to me than let me go down a dark alley that doesn't benefit either of us. I just don't think we do enough of that.
We don't. And I can tell that from a different perspective. In my very limited free time, I coach a high school dance team. So I have 14 to 18-year-old dancers. I have 17 to 25 every year. And the dance world is very specific, right? Like, we lose points if our hands are not in the exact same position, in the exact same plane, at the exact same angle. And so I spend a lot of time nitpicking these kids, right, to the very degree of which way their nose is turned. And one of the things that I always tell my teams at the beginning of the year is that if I am giving you feedback, if I am giving you something or giving you notes, or if you feel like I am picking on you, as long as I'm not saying mean or derogatory things, but if I'm giving you things that are going to make you better, it is because I believe in you. Right. The minute I stop giving you feedback, that's when you need to start worrying, because that's I have decided that it is not worth my time and energy because you're not going to do it anyway. And I've lost the belief in your potential.
Correct. Because it's
more.
But
we don't do
dance.
That as much as we should with grown adults. Like, if I'm able to do that with teenage girls, why are we not doing that with the businesses we're starting, the leaders that we're working with, the people that we care about and want to succeed?
Now, I'm an advisor on the on our local junior fire department. We have one of the best junior fire departments in the United States, and we take 16 to 18-year-olds. Now, we train them, and these kids work. The only difference is they cannot go inside a fire, and they can't handle power tools. Outside of that, they're doing everything else. They're a support group. And I've tried to get across to them that it's not so much that you have to do this absolutely correctly, but you have to understand what you're doing. And so I'm trying to correct your thinking. Because at the end of the day, when a real one goes off, and we've had some real ones, you actually don't have time to think. And lives are a danger, serious lives are a danger. So if your muscle memory isn't built, you're done. And then I get called out for speaking harshly to the kids. I'm like, no, I care about that the kid survives. Yeah. I don't want to be the one that goes to somebody's house, knocks on the door, and says, your child's dead.
No. No, I always tell the dance team when we're traveling, I'm like, the only thing I ask is please don't put us on the news. I don't want to be on the news for any reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Dance coach loses teenagers in Florida. So let's talk about, if we're in wild agreement that, you know, one of the biggest problems that we have is we fail to connect to the customer and what the customer actually needs, and really think about taking ourselves out of our own experiences and our own universalism of this solution. How do we do that? Like, what's the first thing that I should do if I'm hearing this and I say, okay, I have an idea, I want to turn it into a company, I want to start my own business, I want to grow something. How do I know if people want this thing?
Let me back up, because what I tell anybody that wants to work with me is that one of the criteria that I have that I will not work with you is if you cannot admit that either you are part of the problem or the whole problem. And if you can't get that concept, it's fine. I'm not going to say you're a bad person or anything, but we have to change before we can ask others to change. And as I said, when we started, blind spots would cost us the most. We don't understand our own blind spots, or at least be willing to understand our own blind spots, we can't go forward. So that's premise number one. The next thing I try to figure out is where exactly you're having a problem. There's really three categories that people fall into that I work with. And they're confronted with one of three Fs, if you will: fear, fog, or friction. And the fear is that they're very uncomfortable with sales. There are a lot of people, not everybody, but there are a lot of people that sales is a bad word. Sales is sleazy. Sales is, okay, fine. Let's get you through that one. There are people that, you know, they're okay. Sales is, you know, they're not worried, but they don't really understand it because they've never really been trained in it. And sales is a lot more complicated than people really think. And you don't really start to understand that until you've been in it for a while and seen a lot of the use cases and a lot of the corner cases. And then there's the third one, which is the friction, where, okay, they're comfortable with sales. They think they have a process, but for some reason, they're missing certain things where the sales are just taking too long. But I'm always looking at it from the perspective of what modifications, what enhancements do I make on the individual's perspective, not on the customer or the buyer's perspective. In most sales training, and I've seen a lot of sales training, most sales training focuses on how do I manipulate the buyer?
Yeah.
You can't manipulate the buyer if you're not set in your own head as to what it is you're doing, want to do, and can do. And the interesting part is once people start to get set on, they start to understand that, they start selecting their clients and having better clients because they realize, wait a minute, I don't need to put up with this. I don't want to put up with this. If I have a net 30 billing algorithm and the guy won't pay me for 120, I don't need to do business with the guy. Why am I chasing the business? But most people will take any business because they aren't confident that they can reject the business.
Well, it goes back to your original point, right? That there's that fear there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people are not getting to see in the entrepreneurial, the business building world is the level of fear that comes into it. Like there's a fear you have to get over of starting this thing in the first place. And then there's a fear you have to get over of telling people that you started a business and the potential ridicule and judgment you might get for doing something that seems unsafe. And then there's a fear of actually putting yourself out there and that the money won't come and that it won't work out. So let's go back. I mean, if it's fear, fog, and friction, let's go back to fear. What is the thing that we need to do in order to overcome that fear, particularly around sales? Because the number of people who tell me they hate sales, but have never really either never done it themselves or never really had a good sales experience as the customer is like an infinite amount of numbers.
I would love to work with every single one of them, especially women. And I'm serious about this, Alyssa. When I get women to understand how much power they really have, I've turned some into super badasses and they start walking around. I'm a super bad. And I could give you some cases of when you free certain women up, they are amazing. Right. And that's what I get really excited about is to see somebody turn amazing. But look, here's the reality. And depends on what source you use. And again, I'm not looking at exact numbers. I'm looking at notionals and trends. There's enough evidence to suggest that 60 to 70% of who you are and what makes you up is decided by the time you're 5 or 6 years old. So you're running around with these preconceived notions, call them mental models, because to me, they are the mental models. They are the ways you make decisions. They are the prejudices, the perspectives that you have that you didn't think through. Right? I'll give you a quick example. You're 4.5 years old. Your mommy and daddy need a car. They go into the showroom. You're in tow. You're like, wow, this is cool. Shiny stuff, whatever. Right? The salesperson comes up to him and says, oh, you know, you really want to buy blah, blah, blah. And dad goes, that's okay. Thank you. We just want to look around. Salesperson walks away. Dad looks at mom and goes, I hate those scummy salespeople. What just happened to the 4-year-old? That got buried in their subconscious. 20 years later, they apply for a job as a salesperson. They go to try to sell. Their subconscious is going, hey, wait a minute, you can't do this because salespeople are scummy. They have no idea this is happening.
Yeah.
Now, think of how many times, like we have somewhere between 50 to 60,000 thoughts a day. Which is crazy. Think of how many of those are going in for a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old who has no ability to sort them out and determine whether or not they're correct. So the first thing I have to do with folks is start to understand and help them modify, not necessarily change, but modify their mindset. Why do you think about this? So let's give you one great example. What's probably the worst word? If you hear people say, oh, I can't stand sales. Why can't you stand sales? Can't you stand sales? Because it's manipulative. Okay, so the last time your back hurt, what did you do? Oh, I went to the chiropractor. What did the chiropractor do? Oh, he manipulated my spine. Oh, my goodness. Right. Now, is that a bad word? Or is it context?
I think that's really important too. I'll admit, like I always tell people, I was a reluctant seller. I loved the product that we were doing and I loved the thing that we were solving in my first startup. And so I was able to sell because I was so excited about the thing that we were doing, right? And that passion and that excitement radiated off of me.
Correct.
And therefore it didn't feel like sales because it was really just talking about like the thing I was excited about. And then it just so happened that people, you know, caught on to that excitement and then said, okay, how much? And then I had to, you know, do all of that back and forth that I don't love as much.
Right.
But one of the things that I kind of discovered about myself as a personal core value that I also think makes me a pretty good seller is I love the thrill of the solve. Like I always tell people that is a core value for me. I love to break things down. I love to understand why it's not working. I love to come up with ideas and solutions of how we can do it better and different. And so I get so much joy about someone telling me like, here's the problem that I'm struggling with. And then I love the flip side of that where I get to say, oh, here's some cool ideas about how we could fix that. Whether I can sell you a product or not, I love that part. So how do we help people uncover what it is about them, whatever their superpower, whatever word you want to use, that they can use in a sales motion to sell their product, to grow their business, even if they don't love the thrill of the solve or the process that goes along with sales? How do we empower that?
What I find is that they fall into a few groups, and you got to really understand the motivational part of the individual. I mean, the first thing I have to do though is get them to start to understand that these mental models have to be either changed, which you can and can't do. So it depends. Understand the implication of the mental model if you're not going to change it. Understand where it's not appropriate. I mean, all right. So your father was a drunk and he beat you up every week, and that led you to believe that Jack Daniels is the devil. Okay, are we going to deal with that? I don't know, but you know, here, deal with this. Some things you're not going to change. You're just not. So how do you mitigate them? But sales is going to happen based upon, you know, if you enjoy the personal relationship. So if you enjoy people and enjoy talking to people, that's an aspect that's in there. There are some salespeople I know that don't enjoy sales, don't enjoy people, but they sell successfully because they are subject matter experts extraordinaire. Okay. So they understand not only the offering, but they understand the use cases. They understand the applicability of the problem solving. And so they become very successful. I mean, we had a systems engineer years ago at a company, one of the best I've ever seen. And we would bring the prospects in, and Danny would stand up and he would tell them all about the product, all about what it would do, everything, how wonderful it was. There was a pause, and then the buyer would go, so Danny, tell me what's wrong with the system. And Danny was just, okay, now here's what's wrong. And we were, Danny, gotta stop doing that.
Yeah.
But, right, and you know, then there are people, which, and this is where I think one of the big problems comes in, there are people that are masters at tactics. So how do I manipulate a buyer? And I'm not using manipulate in a negative term, but I am using the term of how do I get somebody to do something that I want them to do as opposed to they do? I'm not making a value judgment. It is a strength of certain people.
Yeah.
What they do, all right? So you really have to start to figure out, what do you want to do? Do you want to be a people person? Do you want to be a process person? Do you want to be a tactics person? And people over time, this doesn't happen in one conversation, we'll figure that out with them. We'll get to that. But we first have to get rid of some of those preconceived notions. The biggest issue, though, the single biggest issue, is that people believe that sales is something you do to somebody else. And what I get them to change, and this is when the success really starts to come in, when they really start to get a sense of that first instance of value, is when they start to understand that sales in its purest form, and again, not knocking the guys that are just tacticians and want to take it. Look, con men have a wonderful role in life. They really do. What's his name? Bill Yu, I can't remember his last name, started it, but it was some kind of nutrition company. He and his wife started it. Tom, I think, is his name. Amazing individual. And he needed to be selling door to door, kind of. So he said, well, where can I get people that really understand the art of the deal, how to make a deal, how not to take? No, he started hiring junkies, drug dealers.
Smart.
It's great sport. Yeah. He grew the business to $1 billion. Right, because he understood them. But we have to really look at it as the only reason, theoretically, somebody is having a conversation with you is because they are trying to solve a problem. So your job is to help them solve a problem. Your job is to help another human being who is struggling with something come out of the struggle, have an aha moment, and be happy. That's your job. That's selling. It's not forcing it down somebody's throat. It's not having them say yes six times so on the seventh they close a deal. That's not what it is. But that's what we've preached it to be for so long in this country.
Let me ask you, I'm gonna segue back to an episode that we had a couple of weeks ago where someone said something to the effect of like, if whatever you're selling, if the market is not thirsty for it, then you're not selling the right thing. If they're not like begging for it, beating down your door for it, if you aren't getting people excited about it, and not like everybody, right? But whoever your customer base is, what do you do if you're selling these things? You're doing all of the right things. You are building relationships. You're doing the tactics. You're a subject matter expert in what you do. And yet there's a polite shrug from the people that you're talking to.
Well, there are two things going on right there. First of all, yes, it's very possible you have a product that doesn't match the market need. It's very possible. Okay. I would hate to be a horseshoe salesman out in the real world trying to sell $1 million a year of horseshoes. Right? It's not going to work. Is there a small market for it? Yes. Are there special people to do it? Yes. Usually, so there's a couple of things. One, the salesperson has an obligation, though, to be able to put themselves in a position where they can solve people's problems. Now, is the salesperson not identifying the true problem properly? Or is the product, or I call anything we sell an offering, because it could be a product, could be a service. So I use offering for your audience. Is the offering really not competitive? But here's what I will tell you. I have never sold the best product in my life, and I've been selling for 50 years. And I've sold Danish at Bingo and Cokes to multi-million dollar technology solutions. I have never sold the best product. So the other thing is, as I said before, but it's the crucial thing. Does the salesperson truly, one, have the ability to understand the needs of the buyer at both a personal and a business level? And what I will say to you is, in my opinion, and it's only my opinion, 99.9% of the time, the answer is no. The answer is no. And I've sat with experts in their webinars and in their classes and in their courses. And look, I'll tell you, the other day I was in one, a friend of mine said, hey, you know, come into my Wednesday thing because, I want you to drive all over. I come in. And he's a product marketing branding guy. And he's like, okay. He's got a client or a person in there, one of the group. They are a marketing person for an organization that is selling a product to an end user, but they're selling it through the distribution channel. It doesn't matter what it is. And he started asking them to define the product and the values and the messaging and all that. And all that they were doing was they were focused on end user, the client. I said, guys, I think you've got a disconnect in what you're doing simply because that's not your customer. You've got to figure out how to position this to the distributor.
Yep.
But Alyssa, I see this. Hi.
I have seen that exact same thing. I was working with someone who provided services to an end user, but it was paid for by an original equipment manufacturer.
Right.
And they would always refer to these end users as their customers.
Yeah.
And then when they would try to go sell follow-on services to those end users that were to be paid by the end user, it was like crickets because they weren't used to paying for this thing because the OEM paid it.
Correct.
And it was such a hard transition to get end users who had never had to pay for this service before because it was subsidized to transition. And then eventually the program went away because they weren't selling to the distributor, the OEM, how important their work was.
Correct.
And how they should be investing in it because it's beneficial to the OEM, their actual customer.
biggest reason customers live, and this, everybody should write this down, this thing, the biggest reason historically customers leave their vendor, and we're all vendors, is because the customer comes to a point where they believe that their vendor doesn't care. Biggest cause of that is that vendors fail to reinforce to the customer the value that they bring to them. Yeah. And I have had so many discussions about, well, that doesn't really matter if you're selling a one-off. Well, yeah, it does. It can. So your other issue here is people don't really understand what they're selling. And I'll give you this one. If you ask most people, most salespeople, and actually VPs of sales, what is the reason for closing a deal? And they will answer you, because we're trying to close the deal and we get money. And I forget who coined it, but they're in there. And I use this all the time. The reason that you want to close a deal is to start the process of creating a raving fan customer.
Mm-hmm.
If you can understand that, and if you do that, it completely changes the alignment of the organization and the modus operandi of the salesperson. And yes, anybody wants to talk to me about raving fan stuff, I mean, let me know. It's a whole science unto itself.
You know, thinking about, you know, speaking of raving fans, thinking about the people that you know or that you aspire to know, who is really doing this better than anyone else? Who else should we be listening to?
I haven't run across anybody who's doing this. That doesn't mean they're not out there. Right. But as you say, there's, what, 3.5 billion people out there? You know, I'm not speaking to any of the Chinese, right? So the person that I like to watch right now, this is more from the perspective of what's called the sales training world, is a fellow by the name of Keenan. And yes, he just goes by the name Keenan. His company is Gap Selling. But he is the only person to me that has actually taken the whole notion of the interaction between the seller and the buyer and made it into something that you can actually understand. There was a book came out a number of years ago called The Challenger Sale. Apparently, The Challenger Sale, nobody's read it and you're into sales, you should read it at least 3 times because it takes that long for it to make sense to you. The Challenger Sale is the result of research. Keenan took the book and turned it into practical actions. Plus, he's absolutely insane. I mean, watch his videos. The guy's so amazingly insane.
And if someone is hearing this and they're loving what they're hearing from you, John, where can they find you online?
Go to attitudeselling.com. attitudeselling.com. Book some time with me. Let's get on a call. Let's chat.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining me today on The Growth Signal. This was a really fascinating and truly unique conversation for our show. So thank you so much.
Well, totally my pleasure. Take care.